Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Tuesday on the Savage Nation. That's because it's not Friday. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm ready for ring-a-ding-ding. I'll tell you the truth. After I listen to Rudy Giuliani one more time and Hillary Clinton lie one more time, I'm ready for ding-a-ding-a, ring-a-ding-a-ding. That's about all that's left for us is ring-a-ding. Thank you. All right, yep. Here's a little story for you. Illegal immigrant, Muslim, from Lebanon, worked for the FBI, CIA, stole info, passed it on to Hezbollah. The geniuses at the CIA and the FBI wanted to be more diverse. They wanted to show that they were caring and compassionate. They wanted to reach out to the Muslim community. They wanted to show that they were kind and sensitive. And so they hired a double agent who worked for Hezbollah. She went into the FBI and the CIA and passed the information on to Hezbollah. But that's okay. The main thing is that the brochure at the CIA and the FBI, the brochures, that they represent America. And that they show that the CIA and the FBI are not great crime-fighting organizations. That's not important. The most important thing is that the organizations... population looks like America, particularly Muslims. You must have more Muslims in the agencies like the FBI and the CIA in order to appease CAIR so they don't come after them. They can't afford to be boycotted by the CAIR. After all, the FBI and the CIA might run and hide. They wouldn't get jobs afterwards, would they? Now, am I making the story up? Well, I'll let you decide. It appeared in the Detroit Free Press. It did not make it to USA Today, New York Times, LA Times, San Francisco Chronicle, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, Bill O'Phoney, or Wallbanger. None of them will cover this. They've all been caponized. They have all been converted to the center line. Now, the problem for us is, where are we going to get this news from? Well, I guess a few radio shows. Go on to michaelsavage.com. I've linked it up. CAIR denies involvement with this story. They deny this involvement, but they do not deny that they're involved in trying to destroy Michael Savage. And I'm sad to tell you that some of my advertisers, one of them, has left me. And very soon I'll post the name of that advertiser on my website, and I'll let them decide whether there are more conservatives or more radical Muslims in the United States of America. And they'll decide whether or not they want to see this continuation. Now, maybe I've been too nice on the show lately. It could be that I'm playing these old rock and roll songs and I'm getting soft. So what I'm going to do for you is play Du Hast by Rammstein, and then we'll get back in the mood here on the Savage Nation.
Du hast. Du hast mich.
Du.
Du hast.
Du hast.
Du hast mich.
Du hast mich.
Du.
Du hast.
Du hast mich.
Sing along with Mike. Follow the bouncing ball.
Du.
Du.
Du hast.
Du hast.
Du hast.
Du hast mich.
Willst du bis der Tod euch scheiden? Freuden sein für alle Tage.
Nein!
Willst du bis zum Tage scheiden?
Lieben aus schlechten Tagen. kind of a catchy tune, wouldn't you say? You have me. You have me. You have asked me. You have asked me. And I did not say anything. Will you be until death does sever? Be upright to her forever? No. Will you till death be her rider? Her lover too? To stay inside her? No. Nine. We are in the eye of the storm. Thanks, guys. Give them a few iron crosses and we'll see them in the casino. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Here are the headlines on michaelsavage.com, America's favorite unknown website. Iran's Hitler says gays should be killed. That's correct. The homosexuals who hate Michael Savage, who love Iran, and the Iranian Hitler who say we should not go to war with Iran, should read the timesonline.com article on michaelsavage.com, which says that in Britain, they are reporting that during a private meeting with British members of parliament, an Iranian leader said homosexuals deserve to be executed or tortured, and possibly both. That was at a private meeting. That did not make it to ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, LA Times, or to the Leprechaun. On the right side, we have a story about Norman Mailer, who wrote The Naked and the Dead, and the title of my article is The Naked Red is Dead. The Naked Red is Dead. The reason he was glorified is, of course, because he was a far-left, anti-American, anti-military slime bag from Brooklyn. And that is why he burst on the scene so young, because he published a fraudulent book called The Naked and the Dead, in which he pretended to have been a combat veteran, when in fact he was a cook, mind you, in occupied Japan. I wouldn't mind a war veteran who fought in combat writing an anti-war book. I'd have to pay attention to that one. But when you get a guy who was a cook in occupied Japan pretending he was an honorable guy on patrol, I mean, something's wrong with that picture, but not to the leftists. 1-800-449-8255. Is NYU a suicide magnet? Well, another poor kid did himself in his dorm room, apparently the second this year, but in a long line of kids. And I ask, is NYU a suicide magnet? Is it the drugs? Is it the sex? Is it the red diaper dopa baby professors? We don't know, but we'll keep looking. Paris Hilton in Africa says, don't drink and rampage, she says to the elephants. That's correct. The girl who should know most about drinking and driving is in India. I'm not pretending. This is absolutely true. She is concerned about drunken elephants in India. And that is because the alcohol that is made by the locals is sometimes pilfered by wild elephants, and they go on a reckless rampage the way the party girl did very often on Sunset Boulevard. So who would know better how to control drunken elephants than Paris Hilton? It's a perfect job category. Of course, you don't want to talk about the other one, the FBI, CIA double agent, Muslim from Lebanon, who stole information and passed it on to Hezbollah. That's too difficult. And secondly, you didn't hear it on the Golfer Show or the corned beef and cabbage show, so therefore it's not existent. What you want is Blarney. Blarney is important. More Blarney is more important than anything you can imagine, which is why the Blarney Stone was invented in Ireland. Houston, Texas. JD, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm an ex-South African that moved here 3 years ago. I had a business opportunity, and when I saw the tower going green in New York, it reminded me how the Muslims in South Africa impacted the government and the corporations, and they are less than 5% of the total population in South Africa.
Well, they're all peace-loving. Remember, it's a religion of peace, and only bigots say otherwise.
I've traveled a lot. I've got a consultancy firm, and I will be happy to take you to the northern parts of Nigeria, where every Saturday they have execution.
No, but don't you dare say anything other than that, because the you'll be attacked. The Quran is a book of peace. It's a religion of peace. Just ask George Bush.
Well,
and Why don't you send a letter to CAIR, who's boycotting my show and trying to get advertisers to leave my show? And we've had one cowardly advertiser has left, and I will post their name this week on my website, and I will let you decide whether you want to drop them or not, because there's an awful lot of you out there who bought them because of me. And I guess they think there are more radical Muslims in America than there are conservatives who believe in borders, language, and culture. But they'll find out very soon. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Our enemies must be laughing at us how weak we are. That's all I can tell you. Illegal immigrant from Lebanon, Muslim, gets a job at the FBI, CIA, steals info, sells it to Hezbollah, and basically nothing happens to her. Pleads guilty to conspiracy, unauthorized computer access, naturalization fraud during a 30-minute hearing before a so-called U.S. district judge, and strikes a plea deal. Prison sentence, 6 to 12 months. You hear this? 6 to 12 months in my day, hang her. Hang her. Hang her. Shoot her. Shoot her. Shoot her. No, not 6 to 12 months. Shoot her. That puts a chilling message across the bow of anyone else who wants to play games inside the FBI and the CIA. But we have schmucks from the top to the bottom. It's riddled with pinkos and sissies who are looking for a consulting job when they get out of the government service. I don't know how we win this thing. I don't know how we win this thing. I just don't know how we win this thing. I have no idea how we win this thing. We're like riddled like Swiss cheese. The country's riddled like with Swiss cheese, with moles and spies and rats and mice. And you catch them and they give them a 6 to 12 month sentence, not hanging. I thought that espionage was punishable by hanging in a time of war. Oh, I'm sorry, we're not in a time of war. There's actually been no war declared. It's an unannounced war for the last 5 years. Unbelievable to me. So here we go. Next caller, Kansas City. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I'm a Jew on the prairie, and I just want to express my gratitude for what you're doing to help expose Islamofascism in America.
So you're a Jew wandering in the desert, huh?
Yeah, wandering lost among my liberal friends. Wondering every...
Well, hold on. I'm going to play a song just for you guys. Play the sofa.
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend.
Yeehaw!
Where the horn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum weed. Back in the saddle again.
Joe, that's just for you out there on the prairie. Jew on a prairie deserves this song. Thank you. Watch out for that gypsum weed, though, Joe. I didn't know that Gene Autry was into gypsum weed.
I don't know what Jimson weed is.
That's for my old hippie listeners. You know, when a cow eats Jimson weed, they think that they're a bull.
Then they run for
office as a Democrat.
Well, I got nothing but liberal Democrats around me out here on the prairie. They think it's racist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Their biggest enemy are Republicans, right? Not Islamofascists.
Yeah, where do they say in the Torah you have to vote Democrat?
Joe, that's because they read that hogwash published by the Kansas City Star and the other old line Neanderthalic newspapers that keep publishing the same rubbish over and over again, which is why the circulation is declining, not fast enough to save the country, but it's in the right direction, Joe. The circulation's on the way down. Thank you for the call. What can I say? What do you want me to do? You want me to carry the whole world on my shoulders? Yes. I've been doing it since I'm 5 years old. Charles, Chicago, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey there, Mr. Savage. Hi. I'm calling to ask a question about your perspective on homosexuals. I'm a black, gay, Republican, painfully conservative. I like your radio station. I like what you have to say. I just am confused because I hear, you talk about the Folsom Street Fair. I find that repulsive and it's not represent me at all. And you speak as homosexuals, all these perverted people. And I didn't know what my perspective was on that.
Well, let's say that the Folsom Street Fair, where people were whipped in public, humiliated in public, is a little different than what you're describing, which is relations between adults that is consensual.
Okay. All right. Because, you talk...
Bob, I'm sorry, Charles, I hate to be given a litmus test, but I made myself very clear. What people do between themselves, if they're adults, as long as they don't hurt each other and it's legal, is really their business. It's a free country. My concern is muting marriage and hurting the children and hurting the next generation. That's my position. It's very clear.
I just became a listener. Someone suggested doing a radio station to me. And I heard you saying these things.
Look, Charles, I'm a sexual libertarian, if you want to know the truth. I'll repeat it over and over again. You know, you say that a guy's a libertarian. Well, on what issue is he a libertarian? Or he's a conservative. Well, on what issue is he conservative? Or he's a liberal. Well, on what issue is he a liberal? You have to take the issue. And when it comes to sexual behavior, which is extremely complex, I truthfully have no problem with how a person stimulates their orifices, if you want to break it down to a biological level, because I'm trained as a biologist. I mean, if you're an adult, that's what you do. That's your thing. Just leave the children out of it.
Yeah. Thank you. You were clear, and I so support you. I think you
good.
Will.
That's all. I'm a great guy. You'll find out you love the show. What I don't understand is how the gay community does not understand the danger they are in from Islamofascism, how they could spend more time hating conservatives than they even pay any attention to what the Iranians are saying about gays. I don't understand that part of it, Charles. The only answer is liberalism is a mental disorder. Actually, there's a better answer, and it was written by William Blake. I mean, I published the book Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Admittedly, it was pretty good. It sold a couple hundred thousand in hardcover, Eat Your Hearts Out, Liberals. That's right. It outsold every book you've ever written. I love the libs who put me down. They publish a book, 300 people buy it. But they blog a lot. The important thing is they blog a lot. How do they have the time to do all that? Don't they work for a living? How do they blog all day long with each other? So my title was very good, but there was a better one that had preceded it in the 19th century, and it was written by William Blake, and it goes like this. The eye altering alters all. It's a very interesting English statement. The eye altering alters all, meaning once you start altering things because of your orientation or your political orientation, sexual orientation, you'll alter everything according to that. So you got to be very careful. The eye altering alters all. I mean, Blake wrote it perfectly because he was a great English writer. That's when English really meant something, before guys like you came along and destroyed the language. But the eye altering alters all is succinct, it's clean, and it says what liberals
Savage.
Are. It is the Savage Nation on Rock and Roll Tuesday here. November 13th is the date. We're talking about some of the stories of the day. There are many others. I mean, Pakistan's the big 400-pound gorilla story. And that you have a corrupt woman named, whatever her name is, Bhutto? Is it Bhutto? Coming from one of the most corrupt families in Pakistan's history, trying to pretend to be the feigning little woman who wants democracy is a scream. But with the idiots in the American media buying it, I mean, as they buy Hillary Clinton playing the little woman, it's amazing to me how the people don't even know what's going on in Pakistan. That's a big story. But instead, we'll talk about this and that. You don't want to talk about the big issue, and I won't. Mailer, we can talk about Norman Mailer. My headline on my website is the Naked Red Dead. Chicago, Ron, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. You know, now you take Mailer. He was. You say he was just a cook. Now there was a cook who was killed over in Iraq about a year ago or so. So a cook can be a dangerous job. I'd like to compare.
Well, wait, but sir, he was a cook in occupied Japan. Okay, but we're arguing over kind of a trivial point. There are other issues about Mailer that I find disturbing, despite the glorification by the leftist media. But go ahead. It's your turn on the show.
Okay. I'd like to compare him, let's say, to John Wayne. You know, he's kind of like the darling of the right, you know, as far as this big war hero. But where was he during Second World War? The way
You raise a very good point. And now to counterpoint it, whatever Mailer, whatever Wayne may have done or not done, he did not befriend a robber-turned-murderer in prison, and get him amnesty, and get him early release from prison, and then have him stab another man, which Mailer did. He also didn't stab any of his wives, which Mailer did. So there's a big difference. Thank you, my friend. At least you listen. The main thing is you listen, that's all. The main thing is I got your attention. Now I'm feeling better. The main thing is I got your attention. That's good. We're starting on the proper road now. Is listening is important. You know, you can argue all you want, but first you got to hear what the man says. At least argue with what I'm saying. Don't argue with a tangential point. You know what I'm saying? Rondi, San Diego, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. You'd mentioned before the eye-altering alters all. Well, first of all, I is God, and I is also the higher consciousness. So God can and does alter and change all things.
Well, that's an interesting interpretation. I don't think you think Blake meant that when he said the eye altering alters all. I mean, he meant E-Y-E, not I, not the letter I, not the person, not the personal I. It was E-Y-E. You understand that?
Oh, yeah, I totally understand that. But when you get it to another consciousness, the I...
Beautiful. All right. No, I'm into that. I'm totally into that. I believe that God can alter all.
And that's what I think that he meant.
Well, he was into higher consciousness, William Blake. I agree with you. He was very heavily quoted by the early hippies who were into mind experimentation with LSD and mescaline. And that's where Blake's drawings in particular and some of his paintings and some of his writings became prominent again. You know that as well, Rondi, I assume?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But all right, so you have a history. You know what I'm talking about. Because you got to understand, my show goes out on several wavelengths at once, Rondi. I sound like I'm from the street, which I am, but I also am from the heavens, which I am. And I'm also from the earth, which I am. And sometimes you have to have one eye on the heavens and one eye on the earth in order to function in the middle world. You understand that as well?
Exactly. We're living between two worlds.
Thank you. So here I am. And people can take me either way or both ways or none of those ways, or they can create something out of me that I'm not. You understand that as well, Rondi?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Completely.
So who do I really have in my corner? I have only one entity in my corner, ultimately. And that's the entity that you mentioned at the beginning of your call, the big guy in the sky. The big guy in the sky, I have to believe he's on my side. That's all I can say. I have to believe it. There's nothing else to explain where I am right now in life and how I got here. Nothing else explains it. Nobody helped me, Rondi. In fact, impediments were put in my way every step of the way, impediments were put in the way. Every step of the way to this day, there are impediments put in my way. And there's something there. And I don't want to sit and talk about me anymore. I'd rather talk about you. What do you do, Rondi?
What do I do? I work for an accountant here in San Diego.
Yeah, but Rondi, come on. Really, what do you do?
Okay, what do I really do? I really practice the presence of God and the power of God, and just knowing that constantly.
Well, Rondi, let me go back to something else which may be a little self-serving and such. In my first year in radio, when I was a local host, one of the top guys in the industry, I don't know how I ran into him, called me or I don't know how, and he said to me, you know, one of the unique things about you and your show is that you actually listen to callers and you draw them out. You talk to them as though you know them. As opposed to, Billy, you're on. You're on the Leprechaun show. Yeah, Billy. All right, Billy. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Republican's good. That Giuliani's great. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, what kind of radio is that? It's a one kind of two-dimensional radio. I wouldn't listen to it. Do you find that entertaining?
Absolutely not. No, I don't listen to it either.
Or I don't listen to it because it's tedious. You can predict where it's going. And the other side is the same. Now, I'm making a point. You're one of many millions of people who tune into this show out of a very busy day with hundreds of other choices that you could make. You're in San Diego at 3:39 in the afternoon, East Coast 6:39 in the evening. Yet you've chosen to tune into the Savage Nation. You're not looking for information about Giuliani, are you?
Oh, I already know.
No, and you're not listening for information showing you that Hillary is a fraudulent 12-carat phony. You already know all of those things. So what exactly were you hoping to hear today on this show that you already heard?
Well, I'd like you to go deeper into... the altering and how we can all alter our lives completely.
Good. All right. Well, here's what I feel. Because this country is so divided and so distracted, I don't think we're going to win the war on Islamofascism. I think in the long term, they're going to wear us down through attrition, and they know it. Bush is so foolish that he's bringing them in by the tens of thousands from Iraq and God knows where else, Africa, Iraq. We need more Muslims in this country who come here with a hatred for this country. Is he out of his mind? Why would he be bringing in tens of thousands of Muslims who believe in the self-sufficiency of the Quran, which is at loggerheads with the U.S. Constitution? Why? Why would he be doing that if he thought this through?
Yeah, I just don't understand his reasoning. I think...
Well, it's a country that's digging its own grave, and the enemy knows it. Now, having said that, there's only one thing that can save this country. Only one thing. Not 100, not 10, not 10 fixes. There's only one.
And that is this country turning back to its Judeo-Christian origins. And only when the people recognize that this country would never have existed had it not been for God and his belief in the people who came here, despite the horrors that were inflicted upon the Native Americans, despite all the horrors inflicted upon many others along the way, it was still the best choice at that time in the history of the world. There was no other choice and no other place for God to create his land. And now look where we've come several hundred years later. Take a look at it. Internet pornography, the children poisoned, drugs, sex, rock and roll, poisonous music, poisonous lyrics, the image of American womanhood debased to the level of just women exposing themselves on Sunset Boulevard. Now, what kind of nation is this? Is this a nation God would want to survive?
No.
What does God want of this nation? For him to wink at us and say you're on the right path.
But there are those of us that are standing on our principles. And there's many, many thousands, millions out there that are just like me.
Right, but you don't see you on the media. You're never represented on the media. You're never seen anywhere out there, are you? You're never reflected anywhere out there. It's only by coming together as a unity and as a gigantic unity and then become a gigantic entity from the unities into one entity can we make a presence felt that will be heard in the heavens. And only then will God smile on America again. I believe that from the bottom of my toe to the top of the hair on my head. Nothing else can save this country but a turning back to religion. I believe that from the bottom of my heart. And let me tell you something, Rondi. If you think I'm a holy roller and a perfect man, you're mistaken. I'm as flawed as anybody out there. I'm as imperfect and as conflicted as anybody listening to this show. Nevertheless, I know there's a higher power. I don't believe in a higher power. I know there's a higher power. And I also understand that that's the beginning and end of all things, that I didn't create myself. So I didn't create myself. What man thinks he created himself? What egotistical maniac thinks he comes from himself but a narcissistic fool? And so once you understand that you didn't create yourself but that God created you and take it all the way back to the first human, you have to understand that there's another dimension. And at the end, there will be that other dimension that we all enter with our imperfections, with our mistakes, with our flaws, with our lies, with our cheating, with our deceit, with whatever we've done, we're going to answer for it. And there's a whole scale of what we do wrong. You know that and I know that.
100%.
But well, thank you for listening. I don't know what else to say. I want more tea. I want to take tea and see. I'm drinking tea right now. I'm drinking tea. I'm changing my diet as we speak. I'm trying something new. I'm going, that's not bad. I'm proud to admit to you that I had nothing to drink last night. Normally, I have a couple of beers, sometimes a little more. Not much more anymore, truthfully. Well, maybe a little bit more, squiggly more. I used to have much more when I was younger. I remember 10 years ago, I was averaging 5 drinks a night because I believed in the British medical system. The American medical system said that in order to have good health, you had to drink in moderation. And then the British medical doctor said the same thing. The problem was that the American doctors believed that moderation was 2 drinks a day, while the British doctors believed it was 5 drinks a day. And since this is an Anglo-American nation, I went with my British cousins. And I followed their advice on a regular basis. I had precisely five a day, nevertheless and rarely more. And it worked for me. It actually worked for me. It was actually 5 absolute ounces of alcohol a day that they recommended. And it could have been, that was equivalent of approximately 1 bottle of wine, which I never did because it left me with a hangover, or the beer and a couple of drinks. And that always worked for me. It never affected me. I mean, I have higher degrees, wrote bestsellers, have a good career, helped raise a family. So, I mean, what do you want from me? I'm not perfect, but I did okay. Now it's like 2 beers. But here's the interesting thing. I didn't have to drink last night. I wanted to prove to myself I didn't need to drink at all. I didn't drink at all. It didn't affect me one way or the other. And I want to tell those of you listening to this show, alcoholism is a terrible disease. But there is there are alcoholics who drink, and then there are alcoholics who don't drink. And there are people who drink who are not alcoholic, and there are people who don't drink who are alcoholic. And I found out over the years that an alcoholic has no feedback mechanism when they drink. In other words, if they have 1, they could have 10, 20. There's no end to it. Normal people have a feedback. If I have a couple of drinks right now, I can feel it's enough already. And I stop drinking. The taste changes for me. no matter what it is. I'm very lucky. I'm an extremely natural man. I'm a very lucky man because of that. Do you understand that? And what I'm recommending is just don't drink. That's all, if you don't want to. Now, tomorrow I may want to drink. I'm just saying it's a, you go up and down on it. Now, we could talk about transgender, Pakistan, Bhutto. I really wanted to talk about Bhutto because she's trying to destroy Pakistan because of her greed and her maniacal behavior. And what's killing me is that schmucks like Wolf Blitzer in the media are totally and absolutely eating it up and buying it lock, stock, and barrel. She's the little woman in the headscarf who, if only there was democracy, a peace would reign in Pakistan. I have never seen such idiots in the American media as I see today. The Russians are laughing at us. They're mocking us. One thing you got to say about Putin is he's a genius. He's a political genius. I don't care about his KGB past. He's mocking us at every turn. The Chinese are mocking at us at every turn. That moron, a 10th-rate oil spigot dictator, Chavez, is mocking us all the time. A, because we have the weakest, most incompetent leader in the history of this country. And B, we have the stupidest, most compliant press that can be made to say or do anything in history. They're afraid of saying the truth because they don't even know what it is anymore. And since no one listens to this show, it doesn't matter what I say. That's the beauty of it. But we have Musharraf in Pakistan. Admittedly, he's a dictator, a military dictator. And now, so, all right, well, that's all always bad. Is it always bad? Well, what would you rather have? A democracy like Hamas? Would you like to have a democracy like that? Because that's what you're going to get if you bring in Bhutto. And by the way, Bhutto is a corrupt woman. Put away tens of millions of dollars by everything I read in banks in Dubai and Switzerland. And here she comes back after exile, the little old Muslim with a headscarf, with the big eyes, the big black eyes. Oh, I want him out of uniform, and I only want democracy. And Wolf Blitzer, ABC, CBS, NBC, I think even the Leprechaun are lapping it up. They lap it up. They're stupid. Don't you understand? They sound smart, some of them, but they're ignoramuses. They don't even know what they're doing. No, you don't want democracy in Pakistan right now, boys and girls. I will remind you that a little gentleman by the name of Adolf Hitler was elected democratically in Germany. Democracy is not always the answer. George Bush doesn't know that, though. He's been sold a bill of goods, and he's on the democracy bill. That's what he believes. Wherever you find democracy, there is peace on earth. Well, listen to what Pakistani President Musharraf said. This is astonishing. Listen to 05.
I would like to ask, is democracy more important than the country? If the country is going down and becoming a failed state, is arresting that more important or running a democratic system, so-called democratic system, more important? Which one is more important? Obviously, save the government.
Which one is more important, he said. Is democracy more important than the country if the country is becoming a failed state? It's an astounding statement. You got to remember who the people are in Pakistan. The majority of them are Islamists who would like nothing better than to start a nuclear war with the West. And there's a street, a two-way street that runs from Karachi to London. All the terrorism in London, almost all the terrorism in London comes out of Pakistan. Do you know that? Almost all the terrorism in London comes out of Pakistan. And it comes out of the sewer pipe of the regions of Pakistan that you want to vote now for this little old woman in a headscarf. She's playing the little Hillary Clinton game of, oh, I'm a poor woman, I'm being ganged up on by the bad boy in a military uniform. And of course, the American media, being little boys who don't really know what's going on in the world, eat it up lock, stock, and barrel. But I don't. I'm a realist. I see everything. And I've said this to you, I see everything for what it is. I'm rarely, if ever, wrong. And when I'm wrong, I will admit it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
For the eye-altering alters all. The eye-altering alters all. That comes from The Mental Traveler by William Blake, 19th century mystical poet, painter. I traveled through a land of men, a land of men and women too, and heard and saw such dreadful things as cold earth wanderers never knew. And he starts with the babe is born in joy that was begotten in dire woe.
just as we reap and enjoy the fruit which we in bitter tears did sow. And if the babe is born a boy, he's given to a woman old, who nails him down upon a rock, catches his shrieks in cups of gold. So you have to understand that this is not a direct, literal, you know, poem, as you would expect today. We live in a very literal, pragmatic, two-dimensional world now, that if you don't speak in direct wording, people don't want to hear it anymore. They don't want any allegories. No allegories. Allegories need not apply. So, I mean, I understand that because I can do two-dimensional stuff, too. That's why I'm popular. I know how to speak, you know, to the average person because I am the average person. But, you know, there is another dimension or several other dimensions that are worth looking into. That's all. Ron, Hartford, Connecticut, welcome to the Savage Nation.
All right, sir. I must say that you are an astute individual, and I have to say that I just recently moved out, okay? I'm on my own by myself. I'm single. I'm 29 years old. I'm from Newington, Connecticut. I used to party with my friends and stuff for, you know, since from the age of 19 on to the age of 28. I've moved out now, and the only two things that keep me going is listening to you and listening to Iron Maiden. And the thing that I'm trying to ask you is, how can I, when you were talking about altering, how can I alter myself so that I don't go back to the partying ways? Because this temptation keeps always calls me to go back to the partying ways. You know, they always call me like, hey, what are you doing? Come around. Send me sorts of emails. You know, this girl wants
Hold on a minute. So what is it? You're living in your own house now or apartment?
No, I'm living in my own house now. They're still living in an apartment.
Oh, what part of the partying was the worst? Was it the marijuana?
You could say that, yeah.
Well, listen to me, my friend. Do everything else but kick the drug. Marijuana is the most engaging and deceptive of all the drugs because it seems to be the most benign. Mary Jane is the most seductive and the most dangerous. If you want to stop altering all, then you've got to stop taking in tetrahydrocannabinol.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Right. Well, we can begin with a number of things. If you just tuned in, we had a glorious first hour on the show that ended with a gentleman calling me and saying he's 29 years old. He's a big party guy. He loves a band called Iron Maiden, and he's been partying, and he wants to give it up. What should he do? And since I had previously talked about William Blake's poem, The Mental Traveler, where he says, "For the eye altering alters all." In reference to liberalism, who are altering all because their eyes started to alter for their lifestyle, he said to me, well, how do I stop altering all? And I answered him at the end of the hour, right off the top of my head. I said, if you want to cease altering all, give up the tetrahydrocannabinol. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to or welcome back to the Savage Nation. That was good. Usually at the end of a show, I say the best line today was, or the best story that I did today was. I analyzed what I did that day, and since most of it comes out from the inside out rather than from the outside in other words, you got a guy like Letterman or Leno or the phonies, the other guys who you thought were very smart. I forget their names, honest to God. I'm not trying to be rude. I don't remember them, but they're not on TV because the smart guys with curly hair who are ugly, who write for them, are on strike. And the pretty boys who you thought were very smart can't talk. They can't say a word without somebody writing for them. It comes from the outside in. With me, it comes from the inside out. Now, having said that, the big story of the day is not that I'm so brilliant. It's that Pakistani President Musharraf is the best friend we could ever have in Pakistan. And this Haridan, this
corrupt Haradin, Bhutto, is manipulating Western European media and American media into believing she's a little old innocent woman who simply wants free and fair elections and wants that evil man in the military uniform out of office. And all will be well if only we have a democracy. So Musharraf gave us a talk, which we cut down in clip five that you must hear. Play it.
I would like to ask, is democracy more important than the country? If the country is going down and becoming a failed state, is arresting that more important or running a democratic system, so-called democratic system, more important? Which one is more important?
Well, in a country where democracy has a moral people or relatively moral people, the answer is democracy. But I will remind you that Hitler won fair and free elections. He was elected democratically. I will remind you that in the Gaza Strip, there were fair and free elections and a terrorist organization took power. So be careful about this democracy garbage that you've been sold. It depends upon the country and the time. Democracy is not the answer, Mr. Bush, in every case. But I'll let you speak if you'd like to. WOR, New York. Greg, your opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Michael. I'm concerned because I don't think that this woman, if she does attain power, can hold the country against the terrorists. And, you know,
Well, let's talk about this woman. You know who she is, Bhutto, correct?
Well, she was a big friend of the Soviet Union. Her father, I think, was Zia. I mean, he was assassinated, too. The thing I'm concerned about is...
And her family has been funneling money out of Pakistan for a long period of time. They are intimately involved in graft and corruption, according to all international analysts, except America. In America, the American media thinks she's a newcomer, just arrived on the scene, who simply wants elections. I mean, it's astounding to me how naive the people are. No, they need a good Musharraf. He's the only thing that can hold them together. Do we want nuclear weapons to fall in the hands of Osama bin Laden's minions? Of course not. Thanks for the call. Portland, Oregon, Angel, KXL, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about Bhutto really fast, and I also wanted to commend that young man who's trying to walk the straight path, and I would like to suggest to him that he find a good, hard-headed woman, and he find a woman that's not in recovery. He find a woman that has never been a smoker, and she will...
That's very funny what you said, find the woman who's never been in recovery. That's kind of rare in America, particularly in Portland, Oregon. But he lives in Houston. Tell me about Bhutto from your perspective.
Okay, well, I also wanted to say, Musharraf has done us better than what we've really deserved, because according to what I understand, he began to become... compliant with the United States because we showed up on his doorstep post 9/11 and we said, you need to help us out or we're going to bomb you into the Stone Age. That's what he said himself. And so he could have taken...
Well, we also spent a lot of money supporting him, and which he has spread through the military ranks, which has kept them in line. Remember that. The important thing is we spread the money around through the military, through him, into the military, and that's kept Pakistan in a relatively stable place. We could go way back and recognize that this is the greatest mistake in the history of British colonialism, which was giving a land to the Muslims called Pakistan. Again, the do-gooder Gandhi meant to do good, but he did very bad indeed. Gandhi created a country for Muslims only, and in so doing, during the division of Pakistan and carving it out from India, what he did was he created such mayhem that 1 million people died. They killed each other during the long march of the Muslims to Pakistan. But apparently it didn't work anyway. It hasn't worked because there are many Muslims left in India who are still fighting with the Hindus over the disputed land of the disputed lands. And there are many disputed lands, not just simply one. I can name one, but there are many. There's always something. I know about Kashmir. But wherever you look on the earth, and if you can prove me wrong, then prove me wrong. Wherever there's a conflict on the earth, it is a Muslim group who cannot get along with its neighbor, whether it be in the Philippines, Nigeria, Sri Lanka, which is called something else now, Chechnya, Russia. You look around the earth and you'll always see Muslims saying that they're not being treated fairly. And that is the problem. We have Islamofascism on the march around the world. That's what we're facing. Stop putting your head in the sand. That's my opinion. That's all there is to it. There's nothing more I can say. But the problem is I'm dealing with an altered country here who has been, they've been altered by drugs and liberalism. WOR in New York, Eli, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I'm going to address my subject, but first, can I point out a mistake that I think that you made? Last week, a gentleman called you and asked you for examples of how the church preserved knowledge during the Dark Ages. And you mentioned Gregor Mendel. And if I remember my 10th grade biology, I don't think Gregor Mendel was during the Dark Ages. I believe he was like within the last 200 years. I might be wrong. Am I right or wrong?
But you know, I was wrong, though, for sure. But you might be wrong, but I was 100% wrong. All right, so you picked one arcane point, which we can argue over. Where else am I wrong?
All right. Well, no, I don't want to. Believe me, I'm a dedicated listener to the program. I enjoy your show.
All right, but you're raising a point. You're picking a bone with me. You have every right to do so. I pretend to be an expert in everything. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But we'll go on. Where do we really have a major difference? Because I hear you warming up here.
Okay. The way I see it, the three major problems in this country today is A, this colossal blunder in Iraq, B, the unchecked immigration, and C, the economy, mainly the loss of the middle class of jobs and manufacturing. And from where I sit, it seems that the conservatives have brought this all upon us, especially during the George Bush years. Now, you might argue that George Bush, say, is a liberal in sheep's clothing or whatever, but all his backers, the people that put him in power, his conservative base. And you can't blame and all I hear from you is that everything wrong with this country is from the liberals. And from where I see it, it's...
Well, no, actually, you haven't heard that. What you've heard from me is that liberalism is what is wrong, not necessarily the liberal people. Let's talk about the economy. You're not telling me George Bush is a fiscal conservative, are you?
No, not at all.
I have called George Bush a fiscal socialist on this show numerous times, and I've shown you with documentation that George Bush has outspent any liberal president over the last eight presidencies. He's expanded government well beyond that of even liberal presidents going back to LBJ. So by that definition, we have not had a conservative economy. We've had a very, very socialist liberal economy. And so you can't blame conservative fiscal policies for the state we're in today. Blame liberal fiscal policies for that.
Who put George Bush in power and who realized?
Well, that's a separate question, though. If you want to argue over the benefits or deficits of liberalism versus conservatism, we can do that. But now you're changing the question to who put George Bush in power. That's a whole different question, don't you think?
Yes, I see your point, but you can't.
I'll tell you who put George Bush in power. You may say, "Well, it was conservatives." Are you sure of that?
Well, certainly wasn't the liberals.
You're right about that, but it certainly wasn't the conservatives either. It was the transnationals who put George Bush in power. Only they hoodwinked the Christian conservatives by throwing some mumbo-jumbo at them in the beginning and letting them believe that he was one of them. George Bush was used as the great deceiver to hoodwink all of the core groups that elected Ronald Reagan and then some. That's who put George Bush in power. In other words, like any politician, he had to sell himself to various interest groups. That's what politics is. And one of the core groups that he started with was the Christian conservative base, who is now disenfranchised from him, by the way. Never mind the Pat Robertson story. That makes no sense at all. It just shows you how far gone Pat Robertson has become that he would support Giuliani. You're going to tell me Giuliani is a conservative?
See the cartoon in the New York Times on Sunday?
Stop it. That's funny. It's a funny joke unto itself. So on Iraq, I agree with you. But wouldn't you agree that we have to fight the Islamofascists somewhere?
I tell you, I think the best way to have handled the World Trade Center was the way they did it the first time. If they had prosecuted these people and gone after them, if they had gone into Afghanistan, which was the right thing to do, but they could have finished it then and there, and they didn't.
Well, wait, I keep hearing from liberals that they're all for the war on terror, but George Bush invaded the wrong country. So then I say to them, well, which country is the one you wanted invaded? and they all say Afghanistan, and I say, duh, we're there. Men are dying and fighting in Afghanistan as well. So what is it you really want? You remember the liberals used to say Afghanistan? Well, I say, well, we're there, and then they stopped arguing because they forgot that we also are fighting over there. When I say we, I don't mean that me. I don't mean me and you. I'm talking about the best and the brightest. So now that's number two. Number three, Iraq, illegals, and the economy. We agree on the illegals then? We agree on the illegal aliens being a big problem in the country?
Yes.
But how so? You think that we should have more of them and they should all be legalized, no doubt?
No, I don't want them here. I want Americans working jobs. And when I was a kid, I picked strawberries in the summertime.
Thank you. I worked in an ice cream factory. I was a busboy. I was a busboy working 20 hours a day. I did every dirty job known to mankind. I've been a factory worker. Why are the kids not being given these jobs today? You may say, well, they wouldn't take them. I don't know that they wouldn't take them. But the biggest labor pool we have that's not being exploited are the homeless bums, many of whom are able-bodied men and women who are given money for nothing. If they were told, look, bum, here, Mr. Bum, no one's coming around with turkey sandwiches for you in the gutter. From now on, Mr. Bum, you're going to be, here's a broom, Mr. Bum. Every morning at 8 o'clock, we want you down at this cleanup center. You're picking up a broom, Mr. Bum, and you're pushing that broom in the streets of this city or that city from 8 o'clock till noon. Then you can come and get a coupon for a turkey sandwich. Otherwise, you can starve to death. I'll be right back. Hello, boys and girls. This is Uncle Michael. If you want to cease altering all, give up the tetrahydrocannabinol. I think I'm going to use that from now on for a while. KNEW, San Francisco. Lance, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. Tetrahydrocannabinol. And my dictionary also says Gregor Johann Mendel, 1822 to 1884.
All right. You got me on both accounts. It's hydro, not hydra. And Mendel was in the 1800s. Okay. You got me there as well. So go for the third. Let's go for broke.
Okay, well, I was very pleased to hear you talking about the Bay Bridge and the engineering excellence concerning the impact of that freighter.
Now, before we go on, Lance, what is tetrahydrocannabinol?
It means four waters hanging on a cannabinol radical. I believe it's an alkaloid. But
okay, but what is it as an active principle?
Active principle. It's an active ingredient.
In pharmacology we call it an active principle, but we don't have to quibble over that. But what this compound is found in what substance?
Oh, of course, it's found in cannabis sativa.
Okay, as long as we understand that, you do have to admit though that my couplet, my rhyme, is pretty good though.
Right, sure, and then the rhyme doesn't alter whether it's hydro or hydro, and still works.
All right, as long as we're friends, let's move on to the engineering question. Go ahead, please.
You're fantastic over there. So I was very impressed with your discussion of the excellence of the engineering profession vis-a-vis its implementation of the protection system around the pier on the Bay Bridge. And you know,
around the concrete pylon, okay.
It was very good. And as to the engineering of the Bay Bridge, which, of course, built, what, 38 or something like that, opened in 1938, there is the other span, not the suspension, but the so-called cantilever span, where there was the failure during the Loma Prieta earthquake and a section of the deck came down.
Right.
And this motivated all kinds of Sturm und Drang, you know, concerning we have to have a new span
right
over there. So this
because you can't have graft and corruption without a new span.
Actually, when it came apart, it's my understanding that it was designed to come apart, that there were various pins in there, and when shown at adequate stress, such as would come from an earthquake, it was designed to fail so that the overall structure would not rip itself to pieces and be worthless.
Or go into that harmonium that we all have seen over the years that occurred when it went into that sort of harmonium up in Washington, where it started to go in a resonance, and then the whole bridge was shaking, and then it fell apart. So this bridge was designed to break, lose a piece of the roadway, so you wouldn't get that kind of harmonium running through the entire structure where it would eventually whiplash and snap.
They knew it would be a catastrophic failure, but it's not so catastrophic that you would lose the entire structure.
Well, think of how much money has been made from all of the local Bay Area for all of the principal Bay Area families with the construction of this new span. Think of all the money that's been spread around from the construction companies to the politicians, electrical contract, you name it. I mean, let's face it, the local economy has benefited from this corruption. They need things to fail in order to make billions of dollars. But stay on the line. I'll be back to talk with you about Bhutto.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about the San Francisco Bay Bridge that was rammed by an oil tanker, and the bridge was not damaged because of the genius of the engineering of the 1930s, which was, I want to remind you, done before computers, slide rules, and before affirmative action and EEOC rules and regulations. Lance on KNEW, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Right. Well, it's sort of amusing you would talk about the history of the engineering, because I once talked to a fellow who said he would interview a young engineer and pull out his slide rule and said, what do you think of this? The guy said, slide rule, antique junk. And he'd say, you know, we went to the moon using these, and have you noticed we haven't been back? Little joke.
Well, I'm not an engineer. I want to make that very clear. I mean, I have a couple of higher degrees, but I did learn how to use a slide rule in the 10th grade. It wasn't easy to use, by the way. They're very complicated. You might say the slide rule is a primitive computer. Couldn't you argue that?
Well, you can argue it because of the logarithmic nature of the scales. It's just two rulers. It's as if you're adding inches together, except it's a logarithmic scale. But I would like to hear you expand on this woman whose name, middle name, might be Rodham. Is it Benazir Rodham Bhutto?
Well, don't you see a direct parallel between the way the American media is fawning over Hillary and saying she's a little old, innocent woman who simply wants a chance in a man's world, and now they have the same storyline being applied to Benazir Bhutto?
Right. Give him a leg up.
Well, no, but you see what I'm saying here. What is wrong with the American media that they buy everything hook, line, and sinker when it comes to any kind of sacred cow, whether it be a minority or a woman? What's wrong? What's wrong with them? Can't they see through these acts?
I smell an agenda.
Well, I know Bhutto is a very dangerous demagogue. I will tell you that right now. Any woman who would stage a return rally like this and sacrifice, I think, a dozen of her own bodyguards and see 500 injured simply to make a little splash when she reentered the country is a very dangerous woman indeed. Wouldn't you agree, Lance?
Dangerous. And, of course, the any means just to get to the end, any means.
Are you an engineer, Lance?
Yes, I was educated as an engineer. I don't work that way anymore, but I still have slide rules. Aren't they wonderful?
Well, thank you for correcting me on the hydro as opposed to hydra. My poem still holds up, and thank you for correcting me on Gregor Mendel's tenure on Earth. See, I've told you, when I'm wrong, and I admit it. But in principle, I was right. Indianapolis, Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I got to tell you, I have a love-hate relationship with you. I love you 95% of the time, and I hate you sometimes. And
well, that sounds like most of my family.
Well, you know what? I could be. I could be your nephew. You are my uncle, but I'm telling you, I hate my uncle sometimes. When you're I'm a policeman. When you started on those guys at the university taking that guy down, I was so fired up, and then you called the Christian woman a bigot. I almost decided to quit listening to you, and sure enough, a week later, I'm right back again, and I can't stand it.
Well, you can't agree with everybody all the time, Steve. It's impossible, because you probably don't agree with yourself all the time.
Well, that's exactly what drives me crazy, because I can see the same issue the following week, and I'm taking the other side, or the side that you might have taken. It just drives me nuts.
Well, look, the important thing is that you are a thinking man. You just said something interesting. You said you can take the other side of an issue the following week. It means you're thinking about the issue, Steve. That's what America's all about. I don't want to get into jingoism right now, but thinking people are the salvation of this country. It's the people who don't think that I'm worried about.
I agree with you, Mike, but I just want you to know it's a true pleasure to listen to you. Inspire me. And I have hope for the future of our country when I listen to you. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, all right. And here's the problem. I've supported the police for 15 years, never criticizing them. In fact, I raised money for a cop down in Orange County who was seen banging a kid against the car. I raised $30,000 for him. I actually gave him $30,000 of my own money for his defense, and he screwed me at the end because he then sued the city, won $1 million, and never said thank you. So, you know, I've done these things before. Then all of a sudden I see a bunch of cops pepper spraying somebody. I thought they were wrong in that case. You can't say suddenly I was wrong about all the years I supported the police. And it's the same with so many other issues. I support the Catholics day and night for 14 years, And then when Cardinal Mahoney comes out for illegal aliens and I say Cardinal Mahoney's a phony, all of a sudden the Catholic League, which was my friend, becomes my enemy. You know, with friends like that, I don't need any enemies, Steve. Thanks for the call, although I have plenty. Okay, what do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Let's move it around to something more interesting. My thumb is working again, I'm proud to tell you. It's been two months of this rigid thumb. I mean, hurting. But then I used a homeopathic cream, Arnica. I told you, Arnica is a miraculous medication. And it moved the bruising up in my – you won't believe it. Many say, oh, homeopathy, what is it? Homeopathy is a very intriguing theory of medicine. Many of you don't know much about it. I don't want to get sidetracked into it, but it's fascinating. And its principal idea is like cures like. And they use submolecular amounts of material to move molecules inside the body, which they say promotes healing. And their theory is like cures like. So let's say you have an itch. They'll give you a cream that has an itching compound in it, okay? In this case, I must have ripped my hand on something and don't even know it, lifting weights. I don't know, riding a bike. Who knows what? You know, you have no idea how often you use that opposing thumb until you don't have it. You can't open a car door. You can't open a can of soda. You can't unzip your jacket. You can't wipe your nose. It's amazing what you can't do without an opposing thumb. You fall back below to a lower ape. The opposing thumb is what gave us the human status that we have. God's some engineer, I got to tell you that. This one little tool that he gave us, this opposing thumb. Now, you imagine you lose this thing, you know. So I rubbed the Arnica on this joint. First, my whole hand was out. Then the fingers came back about 2 weeks ago. No more hurting. But the thumb was killing me. So I put it on the joint right where it meets the hand, and it still hurts. But slow. And all, here's the amazing thing. You say, well, homeopathy is fiction. It doesn't work because there's nothing in it to make it work. Well, that's thinking like modern medicine works, where you have to use milligram and gram quantities of things to have an effect. And modern medicine works too. Do you know that homeopathic medicine was the principal medical system in practice in the United States of America until about the 1920s? I don't know if you know that. It's an amazing story. Years ago, I wrote a book on homeopathic medicine. I've been out of it for so long, and I'm not selling you anything. So listen to this, and I'll go on. I put the Arnica cream on the finger again, you know, very blah, blah, blah. And the next day, a huge bruise appears on my wrist. And I didn't hit my wrist. I'm talking a huge bruise. And I've had this happen with homeopathic medication before. It literally moves injuries around in your body. And it could be actually frightening to see an injury moving in your body. So I'm going to leave it at that. And how I learned about Arnica is very interesting. I had a friend years ago who was a medical doctor, regular trained MD, went to Cornell Medical School. And later on in life, Hallett was, I believe, practiced in Sausalito, beautiful guy. He used to have a practice on a houseboat. And when I was a fresh graduate out of Berkeley with my PhD in nutrition and ethnomedicine, I was a part-time nutritional doctor on that houseboat with the medical doctors and the homeopaths. And Hal was a great guy, and he said to me that he's traveled the world, and he said, you really only need to travel with a few things. And he said, one of them is Arnica. And I think he said the other thing was aspirin. I'm not quite sure. But he said he's had all sorts of injuries, and Arnica's always taken care of it. Well, I found it to be true. Hal has already gone on to his reward in the next world. I mean, I don't know. You know, it just happened. People die, you know. Even the best healers get sick and die. I had another friend I lost a few weeks ago. I didn't even know about it till it was over. You know, I really should do a memorial for him on this show. Dr. Robert F. Cathcart III, MD, dear friend of mine, a real pioneer in the use of vitamin C. He was a good friend of Linus Pauling, but he was a medical doctor, unlike Pauling, who practiced medicine. I think he was Stanford trained. I'm not quite sure. Maybe UC Med School. I'm not sure. Lovely man. One of the kindest men I ever met in my life. And, you know, after many a summer dies the swan, I heard that the man had gotten sick and he died. I mean, what are you going to do? He was in his late 70s. And, you know, there's no miracle at the end of the road. Let me tell you, there's a certain, you know, 4 score and 7 and the rest is gravy. That's if you even hit that. You know, and many of us think, oh, I'm going to run, I'm going to eat right, I'm going to take the omega-3s, and I'm going to take the vitamin C and the vitamin E, and I'll live forever. Well, you know, I wish it were true. It isn't true. That's all there is to it. And you know, I'm living through that. We're all living through it. We're all mortal. Don't you understand that? This is like TikTok. It's TikTok time. So I lost a friend. I didn't even know about it. I heard about it through another doctor friend only 2-3 weeks ago. And if anybody wants to talk about Dr. Robert F. Cathcart III and what a wonderful doctor he was and what they did for him, what he did for them, excuse me, call the show, 1-800-449-8255. Look him up on Google. He did a lot of great things. Let me tell you what he did, just by the way. Bob was a regular doctor. And by the way, he was also a brilliant orthopedic surgeon. Bob invented the Cathcart prosthesis about 35 years ago. He was an engineer and an orthopedist. So if you think he was a quack, you're mistaken. You're the quack. He was a great doctor who understood the miracles of alternative medicine long before most of the medical establishment did. So about 35 years ago, as an orthopedic surgeon practicing in Incline Village, Nevada, where he lived, he used to treat ski injuries. And he knew a lot about bones. And he noticed something in hip transplants that the hip joints that were being used, the replacement joints were circular, pardon me. But he noticed that the actual hip bone itself was oval, not circular. So he invented a prosthesis which was more closely engineered to the shape of the human bone as it fit in the socket. And it was ellipsoid. And so he invented the ellipsoid hip joint, or shall I say, he designed the ellipsoid hip joint, and he patented it. And I think it's still used. So now Bob is practicing orthopedic surgery in Incline Village. I'm talking back in the 60s. And he notices that his patients who are sick with the flu, serious flu and viral illnesses, who are self-medicating with vitamin C, are getting better faster than the other patients who are on modern medicine, so to speak. And he starts to incorporate vitamin C in his own life. And he says, my God. And little by little, he starts to incorporate it until he becomes, this is his whole life. Amongst other things. I mean, he was into very many, many other elements of alternative medicine. So he must have treated, by the time he passed away, 35, 40,000 people for very serious viral illnesses with vitamin C, all the way up and down the line from hepatitis to cat bites that were infected. And he cured them with mega doses of vitamin C. And many people say, oh, I tried vitamin C and it didn't work. That's because you took too little. And his contribution to medicine is as follows. Bob taught the medical profession the following. The sicker you are, the more vitamin C you can take without developing bowel intolerance. Now, what does that mean? When you're healthy, you might take 500 milligrams, that's a half a gram, to a gram of vitamin C a day, and you're perfectly, you know, in tune. If you're taking that much, you're doing the right thing, by the way. If you're not taking that much, you should be. You'll find out that the sicker you are, the more you can take. Okay, so let's say you're healthy. You're taking 500 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams a day. That's a gram a day, right? If you were to take 2 grams, that's 2,000 milligrams while you're healthy, you'd get bowel intolerance. That is gas and possibly diarrhea. Your body would start kicking it out of your gut. So what he found out was the sicker you are, the more you can take without developing these symptoms of bowel intolerance. And you yourself can now self-medicate. He taught doctors to teach their patients. So he has found, and I have found with the children, with others, that you can be very, very ill with various viral illnesses now. And you start kicking up that vitamin C. Remember, a flat teaspoon of the vitamin C powder, which is all I use. I don't use anything but the powder, is 4 grams, 4,000 milligrams. And I use about a gram a day. But if I feel something coming on, I'll kick it up to a teaspoon, 2 teaspoons, 3 teaspoons, 4 a day in like grape juice or something along those lines because it's quite, you know, like lemony, okay, because that's what it tastes like is lemons. And that's it. The sicker you are, the more you can take without developing bowel intolerance, called the bowel tolerance theory of vitamin C. Cathcart wrote about it. So he gave the world a lot. He cured an awful lot of people. And as I say, the man passed away. And if you'd like to say something about that, here's the phone number to do it at, 1-800-449-8255. And again, I would consider Bob Cathcart one of the really great doctors of his generation. It's a real loss to medicine. And yet you probably didn't read about him because he was not a liberal. Bob was a real great conservative. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, here's Here's a story close to my heart. Judith Regan, super publisher, who tried to publish O.J. Simpson's book, I Did It, filed a lawsuit today in New York State Supreme Court, Superior Court, Rupert Murdoch's media conglomerate for defamation, claiming that she was unjustly tarred as an anti-Semite when she was fired last year from HarperCollins. It's a $100 million lawsuit filed today in New York State Supreme Court by Judith Regan, and she accuses several defendants in this case, including Murdoch's News Corporation, HarperCollins Publishers, of orchestrating a smear campaign that was intended to advance the Murdoch political agenda and, quote, protect Rudy Giuliani's presidential ambitions, close quote. This is an amazing lawsuit because it goes very far. Regan charges she made the Murdoch firms, she says, claimed that she was anti-Semitic during a phone conversation with a HarperCollins lawyer. However, the ousted editor alleges that the offensive statements were never made, an assertion that she says is backed up by a temporary secretary who listened in on the call in question. Now, here comes the kicker. An excerpt from Judith Regan's sprawling 72-page complaint even quotes in it the tawdry sex suit once filed against the great American patriot and family man, Fox News Channel star Bill Lufferman O'Reilly. And it can be found on The Smoking Gun. It's an amazing story. I don't know where this is going to end up, but I expected that there would be a lawsuit because you're not going to fire a fighter like her and not get sued. I'm surprised that they did this to her, personally. I mean, whether they liked her or not, or she was fiery or not, what's the difference? I once had a publisher who I fought with a lot. We argued a lot. And then because he published my books, he did well, I did well, but we were always arguing over something. And then once I visited him in New York, and he said to me, you know something? He said, you're a difficult man. But he said, so I'm a difficult man also. So what else is new? He said, anybody who does anything in this world is a difficult man. And that was the end of it. We understood what the world is. The doers of this world are difficult people. You don't throw somebody out of a job because they're a difficult person, unless you expect to get a lawsuit back in your face. And I remember this publisher very well, a real crook. Turned out to be a real crook. He had been a captain in the infantry in World War II. I really respected him. A real fighter, independent, but a crook at the end. He robbed my royalties. I hope he got you-know-what at the end. I really do. I really do. A real crook. He robbed me and all his other authors. It was a heartbreak. And I needed the money then. Believe me, I needed those $20,000 a year in royalties at the time. I needed it. He took every penny, that crooked bum with his limousine. Introduction, says the lawsuit. This action arises from a deliberate smear campaign orchestrated by one, and I'm quoting now. I am quoting from Judith Regan's lawsuit against Rupert Murdoch, and it names in it certain things, Carrick, Giuliani, and even O'Reilly's in there somewhere. I'm going to read now. This action arises from a deliberate smear campaign orchestrated by one of the world's largest media conglomerates for the sole purpose of destroying one woman's credibility and reputation. Oh, here we go with the woman already. This smear campaign was necessary to advance News Corp's political agenda, which is long centered on protecting Rudy Giuliani's. Oh, my God. So what is she doing here? Why are they tying Giuliani into this? I wonder what this has to do with the fact that Giuliani only goes on certain shows and won't come on the Savage Nation, and why his poll numbers are collapsing. I'm just reflecting. Two. Quote, it is now widely accepted that one of Giuliani's major political vulnerabilities is his association with Bernard Carrick, the former NYC police commissioner and member of Giuliani Partners, who was recently indicted on federal charges of tax fraud and corruption. Defendants were well aware that Regan had a personal relationship with Carrick. Oh, yeah, the tryst, the alleged tryst. Again, that was an editorializing. In fact, a senior executive in the News Corp organization told Judith Regan that he believed she had information about Carrick that, if disclosed, would harm Giuliani's presidential campaign. Oh, my God. She goes on in the lawsuit, or it goes on. This executive advised Judith Regan to lie to and to withhold information from investigators concerning Carrick. Oh, my God. I got to read on. And when I come back, I'm going to dig into this. I want to get up to the Lufa man, because he's a great American family man. He wrapped himself in the flag.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language,
adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, there's a breaking story here that I have to go into. I didn't know that I'd be talking about it, but Judith Regan, a colossal publisher who ran HarperCollins, who was summarily dismissed by the Murdoch News Corporation virtually without knowing what was coming. She was blindsided. And I think her reputation was smeared by what I saw, the way they did it to her. I mean, from an outside looking in, she sued them today. 72-page brief. Her lawyer is a top guy named Bert Fields out of L.A. I'm not going to read the 75-page lawsuit, but I did some speed reading during the break. And here's the page 44 of page 75 of a lawsuit. Charge number 125. Listen to this. She says in the lawsuit, News Corp's double standard for men and women. Would you believe this? Now, I'm going to read it to you cold. Even if Regan had been solely responsible for controversial projects such as O.J. Simpson and Mickey Mantle, the fact that she would be fired and smeared as a result is clear evidence of News Corp's double standard, they charge, and discrimination against women, they charge. In fact, News Corp does not have a single woman on its board of directors. Wow. Here's 126 and then I'll stop. These are numerous reports. I think they meant there are numerous reports. No, these are, maybe they made a mistake. There are numerous reports of shocking and offensive behavior engaged in by high-ranking men at News Corp. This is in the lawsuit now. I'm not making these charges. She is. And I'm quoting again. These include Bill O'Reilly, who reportedly paid millions of dollars to resolve a sexual harassment suit brought by a female producer at Fox News, and who was recently accused of making racist and hateful comments when he discussed a trip with Rev Al Sharpton to a restaurant in Harlem, Colonel Allen or Cole Allen, who reportedly received sexual favors from strippers at Manhattan Topless Bar Scores, which in turn received much favorable coverage in the New York Post, and who reportedly tries to intimidate employees by urinating in his office wash basin during editorial meetings. Oh, come on. Is she making this up? A guy does that while you're going to a meeting with him? Whoa, sicko. I thought San Francisco was a whack job. I'm quoting now. And Joe Chalemi, Fox News vice president, who was recently sued by the EEOC for sexual discrimination and harassment. Quote, the fact that News Corp fully supports these individuals but fires and smears Regan clearly demonstrates defendant's sexism, she claims, in her lawsuit. And then she makes a good point. She says the aftermath of Regan's firing, the O.J. book becomes a number one bestseller. You see? Well, I don't know. It's all there. God, a man urinates in a sink while I never heard of such a thing. Whoa. God, I need some brown soap after reading this one. 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about something most Americans never heard anything about nor care nothing about it. But I can't help it because it's a media story that I'm very interested in, having had 25 books published by now and knowing, let's say, a few of the ins and outs of publishing and how they operate. And what they did to this woman, I thought was a very surprising thing indeed, that they threw her out overnight without any advance notice, because they can only fire her for cause. I think she was made, from an outsider looking in, they had heat because of the O.J. book coming out, and they threw her out the door saying, they threw her under the bus because they figured they could blame her and make her the scapegoat. That's what it looked like to me from the get-go. Stupid. Stupid. It was stupid on their part. Idiotic. But, you know, everyone makes a mistake. So it might cost $100 million. So what? The stockholders will pay it gladly. What do they have, a choice? They have no choice in the matter. 1-800-449-8255. You know, Lin Yutang, one of my favorite Chinese-American authors. In fact, he's the only of my Chinese-American authors who I know, but therefore he is my favorite. But then again, you could say since he's the only Chinese-American author I've ever read, he's also my least favorite. But in either case, Lin Yutang wrote a book years ago called The Importance of Living, which I found when I was 18 in a friend's father's library. While I were smoking pot and getting drunk upstairs, hitting the drums, I got tired of the noise and went downstairs and went into his father's library. His father was a humble milliner in the garment center, uneducated but very well read, had a vast library. I sat and read it down there while the idiots were upstairs hitting the drums. And I found a book called The Importance of Living, and I had never seen a book like this. And one of the things about the book that struck me, well, I was like in my sufferings of young Werther phase, you know, where woe is me, 18, blah, blah, blah. So I find this book, and it was about the search for happiness. You understand that? And kids are always searching for happiness, not us older folks. We all have it. We have it made. We're all happy all the time. So, but at 18, it's very acute, you know, very, very acute. Everything's overly romanticized and dramatized. Some people outgrow that drama and romance, but most adults today don't. They're narcissists and dramatists, and everything in their life is overly dramatic and overly romanticized. And I'm guilty of it, too. I admit it. But so I find this book, The Importance of Living. And Lin Yutang, I never heard about, says the Chinese theory of happiness is as follows. Happiness consists of getting your hair cut every 2 weeks, he writes, and watching your neighbor fall off the roof. Well, it struck me as very funny because you say, what? Watching your neighbor fall off the roof, that's funny? Well, it's not funny, but in a way, he tapped into the human condition and human nature. Why would watching your neighbor fall off the roof make a neighbor happy? Why would someone who studied ancient Chinese literature come up with that? Why? That's so un-PC, so un-American to say a thing like that. Because that's true. You know, I mean, that's most of us like to see the other guy get in trouble. What do you think rubbernecking is? What do you think that is? Ooh, look at that. What a smash up. You're glad it's not you. You're watching your neighbor fall off the roof. He got into a wreck and you're glad it wasn't you. That's rubbernecking. But there was so much more in the book. I won't go into it right now. And I guess that's why I'm enjoying reading this lawsuit. Someone else is being sued, not me. But I'll sue. I got someone in my horizons right now. They're going to get a salvo of 16-inch guns very soon. They're hiding behind religious freedom while they're attacking my freedom of speech. They'll find out which way the wind blows in America, that we're not living in a cave in Pakistan. Chris, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Michael. I'm a little curious, though, as to why you would seem to be sort of defending Judith Regan, who, if I recall correctly, made her reputation as sort of a pimpess of publishing, doing books by porn stars, jerks like Stern, and windbags like Limbo, although those are not he's not as disgusting as some of the other projects that she
has. No, but wait, but the object of she's not a pornographer. Let's not go there. She didn't publish pornography. She's not, you know, like an Al Goldstein type.
She didn't, but let's face it, you know, she brought this very much to the fore and was very, very high on marketing this type of book.
And look, to be honest with you, I don't really know all of the books she did, but she published the Mickey Mantle book. What was that, a smear book against Mantle?
She was big on sensationalist, basically disgusting kind of stuff, and she's fairly disgusting herself. So I'm just very surprised that you...
Well, hold on now. Let's go into this. I don't know much about her, but I do know that they, in my opinion, irrespective of what you think of her as a publisher, do you think she was published for fired for cause?
I actually do believe she was fired for cause. I think... You know, she was probably a horrendous person to have around, no matter what her financial...
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on now. You know and I know, as I said to you earlier, all dynamic people in business are difficult people. Come on, Chris. You know that all dynamic people are very difficult. You know that.
Completely accept what you're saying there. What I'm saying, though, is she just seems a bad example to defend because of this, and I'm wondering if perhaps because of the O'Reilly thing you got a little bit more excited about this.
Well, okay, I'll admit I'm human. I don't happen to like O'Reilly. I think he's a complete fraud, to be honest with you. I don't buy his act. I'm sure he doesn't buy mine. You know, he claims that he's looking out for you and he wants controversial people on, yet he completely denies that I exist, and that's because we're competitors. I understand the competitive nature of the business, but I don't buy his malarkey. He doesn't like me, and I don't like him, and that's as simple as that. I think he does a very good job on TV. I think he's talentless on the radio, and I think he uses radio simply as a platform for his TV show. But that's one man's opinion. No, I'm looking at this for another reason. This woman, irrespective of the book she published, made a fortune for her publishers. Remember that publishing is ultimately a business. And she made a lot of money for her publishers. all of a sudden, Murdoch, you believe, was Lily White and didn't want a book out about O.J.? She claims in a lawsuit that he approved that book. He approved it. He signed off on it long before this controversy erupted. What I'm saying is it seems to me that there was a double standard here in the way they dumped her.
Well, you know, very possibly, but I still think, you know, I'm glad to see her go, be honest with you.
You're glad to see her go. You must be in the publishing industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we really don't need people like her in the publishing industry. This world does not need it. We've got enough disgusting stuff rather than having a champion of the lowest common denominator.
All right, so let me ask you. I'm not going to ask you who you're with because I wouldn't expect you to say so. What do you think of my four books, The Savage Nation, The Enemy Within, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, and The Political Zoo? Are they also bad?
To be honest with you, Michael, I haven't read any of your books because although I think you make many good points many evenings, I also think you have a flair for drama many times. It drives me nuts, too.
But, oh, wait, you're in publishing? Wait a minute. What does that say about you? You're in publishing, but you've never read any of these four best-selling books? The first one sold 330,000 in hardcover. The second sold several hundred thousand. The third broke 100,000, and so did the fourth. How could you not read these books?
Wait a minute.
How could you say you're in publishing?
I did not say I was in publishing.
I'm sorry. I misinterpreted what you said. I said, are you in publishing? And I thought you said yes.
No, I did not say that at all.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for the call. We don't have to argue over everything. I mean, I can do that. There's no point to it. I think that by what I see, Judith Regan was fired unfairly, by the way. Now, here are the authors she published. And I'll read the names I know. Ralph Nader, you say he's sleazy? Sean Hannity is sleazy? No, he's a wall banger. He's an empty suit. He never went past high school. But if he wrote a book with 35 words in it that were original, I would be surprised. Howard Stern, a balloon man of the lowest order. One of the sleaziest human beings in the history of America. The kind of person that would have made Hitler come to power is Howard Stern, in my opinion. Rush Limbaugh, another genius. Vivian Tam, you can't say she's sleazy. Susan Estrich, I have to hold my nose. I'm reading the names of the authors she published. Peggy Noonan, top of the line. Arianna Huffington, please, rotten fruit on the jungle floor. But not sleazy. She's not pretty enough to be sleazy. She's way past the age where she could be sleazy, even though she might like to be. You know, if she ever thought of being sleazy, it's impossible for her to be. Eminem, is that a candy? Never heard of him. Robert Bork, you're going to say is sleazy? The guy was a great guy. Motley Crue, I guess that's a rock and roller. General Tommy Frank, she published. You say he was sleazy? I don't think so. Marilyn Manson, sleazy. The Rock, don't know him. I'm reading names I heard of. Dr. Ben, Jackie Collins, don't know who. Bill Salmon, I think he's a journalist somewhere. Mario Puzo, she published. The guy was admittedly one of the great storytellers of our generation. I'm reading the names of people that this woman published. No, the man was wrong. All of these names, you can't say they're all sleazy. David Walachinsky, who's that? Oh, Mike Wallace's real name. That's David, must be his son. It's like the other one works for the Sonny Bono, great guy. Sonny Bono invited me to the House of Representatives to have dinner in the Republican congressional dining room because of him. It was so much fun. Wow, guy from the Bronx, never ran for office. That was a thrill for me when I was younger, eating in the congressional dining room. It was so 19th century. It was so throwbacky. I mean, everything in it was like, you know, like, I mean, it was like the antebellum South in that dining room. I loved it. All the people pretended that they were like, you know, like against that kind of thing. I never saw anything like it. I felt like I was in a Southern plantation house. Bernard Carrick. Well, we won't say anything on Bernard. He's got enough trouble. Bernie Mac. Isn't that alone? I don't know who that is. Liz Goldwyn. I don't know. I'm reading the names now. I'm trying to see if I heard of these. You can't say all of them were sleazy. You cannot say that. You cannot say that. I'm going to read a few more, then we're going to go on. Jane Seymour, I think that she owns a deli on 2nd Avenue. I'm not sure. Some of these names I never heard of. Barbara Guggenheim, I guess she inherited money from the guy who gave the money for the museum, I would think. What she could write a book on, I have no idea. How I inherited money and blew it, I don't know. I have no idea. Douglas Coon, Peter Evans, never heard of Tom Fenton, don't know who he is. Peter Robinson, Peter Burley, Dave Navarro, Ludo LeBeuf, Richard Chamberlain, wasn't he an actor? At some point, I think he was like a cutie pie. I'm almost through here. Rabbi Shmulu Shmendrik. I never heard of him. I don't know all of these other people, but certainly you can't say that all of them, including the wall banger, are sleazy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Michael Savage, you're good for your mind, for your body, and for your overall health. 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about so many different things, I can't even summarize them. You really have to have listened to see where we started and where we ended up so far in the show. It's a very exciting night. And the last caller was 100% wrong, by the way. I just read you a list of people, and most of them are far from sleazy. Yeah, thrown into the mix are some sleazebags, okay? But by and large, she's just a very successful woman publisher, and I think she was unfairly dismissed. And I think there is a double standard at News Corp by what I read in her lawsuit. We'll have to see which way the jury goes on this. I'm going to watch this one. I never met Judith Regan, by the way. Never, never, never. I have nothing in this. I'll use an American phrase. I have no dog in this chase, or whatever, how they put it. I'm not very good on these pat phrases, but I really have nothing in this. Michael, WTNT, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, that last guy was a liar, because he did say he was a publisher. I heard that.
I heard it, too, and so did my screener. He then changed it, okay, then said, oh, I didn't read your books. Okay, he was playing games with me. My guess is he works for News Corp.
Yeah, let me tell you another thing. You were on the Hill. You were with Sonny Bono. I've eaten there many times. What's the most famous soup at that restaurant? Navy bean. Why?
Navy bean. No, but isn't the congressional dining room like antebellum South? I never saw such segregation in my life.
Isn't it something with the white gloves? You know, they're treated like royalty. It looks like Atlanta.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, no wonder they work for 100 grand a year. No, look what else they get.
Let me tell you, Mike, you were talking about the wall banger. I think you should give him a new name, the roofer.
Hold on, Michael, you got to stay on because you're going to talk about a Chinese restaurant you once owned, and I can't wait to hear the inside story, the duck story. Welcome back to the most wonderful show in radio. And by the way, make no mistake about it, talk radio is the most difficult of all mediums, whether it be visual, spoken, or printed. There's nothing more difficult. We're on a tightrope every day. And as you can see by the talking heads who you thought were very clever and smart, who are not on the air because the smart guys who write for them are off the air, you understand what you're really getting for your money here, don't you? Let's go back to Michael out of Washington, D.C. on WTNT. Michael, go ahead. You were saying you owned a Chinese restaurant and?
Mike, it was a Thai restaurant, Mike.
I love Thai restaurants.
Great, great food, but let me just tell you, these are like mules. When you get them in the kitchen, I don't want to give your listeners the whole thing, but I'll just tell you, when they're smiling with that cute little face and they wiggle the body, they put the two hands together, welcome and all that. It's a deadly sign right there. You got to watch them closely. We're New Yorkers. You know, we look behind our back.
I don't go for the bowing. In San Francisco, where I live, all the libs bow when they come into Asian restaurants. They think they're going into a spiritual realm.
The kitchen is the best. Mike, you know, when they tell you...
Oh, I don't eat in Chinese restaurants unless the kitchen's open. I won't go in there otherwise. I want to see what kind of little furry creatures are running around and being otherwise tamed.
I didn't have a door in the kitchen. I let everybody walk in, so they had to be at attention.
Wait, you're a New Yorker. You mean you dressed up in one of those Thai outfits and bowed?
No, I just was the investor in the deal and put the package together.
What kind of Thai? Let me ask you, because I actually know all the different the best Thai food I ever had in my life was in Honolulu in the late 60s when I lived there. I had a black friend, ex-military, who married a Thai woman who opened a Thai restaurant. She and her friends cooked, and I never found Thai food like that again.
It's very hard to find real good Thai because they make it American Thai, they make it West Coast Thai, they make it East Coast.
Oh, it's horrible. Do you know that every Asian restaurant I go into, you know what I have to say to them? No sugar. No sugar. No MSG. No Meijing. No sugar. And they look at me like, oh, no sugar. Yeah, I'm like, I don't want candy. I don't want candy Asian food.
when you take the Thai food with MSG, you'll know you'll be thirsty. But some people have a reaction where they actually shake and they lie and they smile. Oh, I didn't put no sugar. I didn't put no MSG. You know, just leave the food there and say, I'm sorry, I can't pay you. Thank you very much, and walk out.
Michael, you know, in the early 70s, when I first moved to California, I used to be more of a cook than I am now. And one of the things I used to mess with, I used to make Thai curries because I found an import company that brought in Thai paste, Thai curry powder in a package. It was unbelievable. And I remember cooking on the beaches. I would do woks for friends and knock myself out with the chicken and this and that. It was unbelievable. I can't find really good curry anymore.
You can get there's a small plastic container. It comes either in a powder or a paste. It's very good. I don't want to tell you the name on the air. You give them a promotion. But anyway, they don't
deserve. Where is it from? China? It's got like baby parts in it?
You ever see Fat Boy Oyster Sauce? Fat Boy Oyster Sauce? Okay.
Yeah, it comes with chopped up baby fingers in it and a little kidney, the leftovers from the kidney veins that they couldn't sell. You know what I mean? It's like Truns. We sell everything but the squeal.
I couldn't use dry.
I mean, that could be the new motto of the People's Liberation Army: is we sell everything we kill, everything but the squeal.
You know, whoever advertises on your show gets the bang for the buck because you had like it's not going to Dubai, it's not coming from China.
You know, we can definitely be sure that advertisers on my show are not related to companies from China, Dubai, Syria and Lebanon. I mean, we're pretty sure that in Egypt, I'd add a few more countries to that list. Michael, you would you recommend getting in the restaurant business?
It's a tough business. And you know what they do? They hijack you, Mike. They come outside. They see the whole place busy on a Friday and a Saturday. And then they come in on Monday. Oh, I need more money. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're slow on the East Coast. You know, slow nights. And then they come in and they're out there.
Those are the only nights I like to eat out. A good Tuesday, the place is like half full. That's a good night for me. I never go out on the weekend. I stay home because you know what's coming. You got the people who are the weekend warriors. They scream. Why do they scream in a restaurant? Tell me about that behavior.
Well, you see, where we live, we have what they call the freeloaders. They come in on the busy night to pick on something so they get the food for free.
Oh, my God. They still have the rackets. Wait, we got a good conversation here, Michael. Years and years ago, I knew a person who told me her father went back to the Depression era and that he was starving. So what he did was he put on very good clothes. He'd go in a restaurant and he'd eat a half a meal and he'd put something in the food like a nail. And then he'd scream, oh, blah, blah, and they would give him the meal for free. Does that still go on?
It goes on with the seafood dishes because they're the most expensive dishes.
Oh, that's awful. People still pull that racket like a hair or a nail or they put stuff in their food after they eat half of it?
Matches, wooden matches.
Oh, my God. But how often do they do that? Is there a certain type without getting into race? Is there a racial element here or what?
There are a lot of Americans that do it that are government employees, Mike.
Oh, my God. They're the worst. They're cheaper than doctors?
Oh, no. They make doctors look like sports.
No, because I know cab drivers in San Francisco tell me, I ask them who the worst tippers are because there's a lot of conventions here. They say by far the doctors are the worst than lawyers.
Well, doctors may be bad on the West Coast, but in the Washington area, you got to understand, the government employees are called maggots.
Ooh, I wonder why. I wonder why they call him that. No, but because I have a friend who was in the restaurant business. Beautiful, fancy place here. I ate there many times years ago. He said, Michael, don't ever go in the restaurant business. The worst business in the world. He said, when it's good, it's bad. He said, not only, even if it's good, you're going to get robbed, is what he's saying, because whoever's in there is going to knock off the cash, number one. And number two, he said, you're only one meal away from ruination.
Well, let me tell you the problem with a Thai restaurant in the Washington area. If you open up, let's say, on First Avenue, right, Mike? There'll be three more on your street if you do good in 6 months. They'll open up every 40 feet. Yeah.
Really? So you're no longer in the restaurant biz?
No, what I'm doing is like consulting for showing people how to run the healthy part of the restaurant.
That's smart. Consulting's good if you can find people who want to listen. I was reading yesterday in the paper that in San Francisco, a chef, after paying $60,000 for tuition, only makes about $32,000 a year as a chef. And then the owners are saying that's really more than enough for them. Most of them can't even cut a carrot properly. They come out of a cooking school today, and right away they want to be like a celebrity chef on the Iron Chef, and they don't know why they're only making $32,000 a year. Is that a problem, is getting good people who really know how to cook?
Yeah, that's the problem is getting really good people, but where we are now, it's like Hollywood East, it's Berkeley East. You know, Tom Cruise shops, you know, stops in one Italian restaurant, and the place is famous overnight, and then they die in 6 months, you know?
Oh, my God. Why would they think Tom Cruise knows anything about food?
I don't know if he knows anything about people.
I don't think he knows anything about anything. I mean, but that's irrelevant. Why would they want to eat in a restaurant? Because an actor who's a marionette, who pretends to be somebody, eats in the place. I mean, what would he know about food? He's a pretender.
Because now we have Washington is no longer a government town. It's a celeb town, Mike. And everybody is, like, starstruck when these morons come off the plane and do a...
Are you originally from New York? You and I, like, you talk like me a little bit. You Italian, probably.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But, you know, you...
I love you say, of course. Where'd you grow up?
I told you, Grand Street. I called in one time down to Little Italy.
Oh, my God. Little Italy, the real McCoy. So you know all the places from the old days.
Oh, yeah. Bobby Blonde was Bobby De Niro. You remember Bobby De Niro's nickname?
Yes. You want to hear my favorite from the years I lived in New York, and I don't know. It's probably still there. It's, oh, God, I'm putting myself on a spot. I can't remember. La Luna. I used to love La Luna on Mulberry Street. Is that still around?
Yeah, La Luna's still there.
I liked it. That was like the old guys would eat spaghetti at night with no sauce, no oil, nothing on it. That's where I first saw him doing it. I'd come out 2 in the morning with friends, dance, whatever. Everyone's eating like veal parmesan. What did kids from Queens know about Italian food? Nothing, right? And they're like giving themselves early heart disease. They're clogging their arteries with like, you know, lamb and beef at 3 in the morning. And I see the skinny Italian guy sitting in the back, and he's eating plain pasta, boom. And you know what? As I've gotten older, I realized the guy was right.
Mike, downtown, you know, I have a little story about Sonny Bono because you brought him up. He came.
Wait, before you go, wasn't he a great guy?
Sonny Bono was a great guy.
He was a solid, great guy. Died in a skiing accident. And I still think that was a suspicious death, incidentally. But that's a separate story. I know UFOs drove him into the tree. What were you going to say about him?
He came downtown, and we ate at a fish place on Grand Street across the street from Ferrara. It's no longer in business, but Joey Hunter, who used to have a modeling agency, was close to Sonny, and that was when he was dating that Polynesian-looking girl. But he came in one time to the restaurant, and, I mean, you know, he just picked up checks, table after table. You know, he did the old style. Oh, how you doing? How you doing? Just pick up checks.
Who, you know? Sonny did? Sonny picked up checks from strangers?
You know, everybody's like, hey, Sonny, how are you? You know, New Yorkers, Mike. Hey,
wow,
Sonny,
but where do you have – oh, he was an actor. See, he had some residual royalties. He could do it. He wasn't doing it on a congressional paycheck.
No, no, he was the mayor of Palm Springs at that time.
And you're talking about in which city did he do this, though?
Downtown, Little Italy.
Oh, okay. Even though he was from another state, he was still doing it.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
They don't exist anymore. No one does that.
They tap their feet now, Mike, and they want $10.
So when you come to San Francisco, have you found good Italian food?
You know, I followed your advice. I was there 3 months ago. I tried that what's that name of the place you used to eat at?
We're down on the water?
Yeah, they got $50.
No, we can't say anything negative about anybody. They're still my friends. I don't hang out anywhere anymore. I've given up on everybody. They're good people. Food is good, and we'll leave it at that. Michael, thanks for the call. I never put down a former restaurant owner, ever. Never. You never heard me do it for any reason whatsoever. Because my thumb hurts me. That's why I won't do that. Well, I had a lot of fun so far on the show. You want to make a few calls, 1-800-449-8255. Here's a story now. That movie mogul Harvey Weinstein got a rap in the nosy. I don't believe this story. I'm becoming like a gossip columnist tonight. Page 6, Richard Johnson, New York Post. Movie mogul Harvey Weinstein had to defend a lady's honor Saturday night when a tipsy DJ landed in the lap of a woman at his table at the Gramercy Park Hotel's Rose Bar and groped her, sources said. Other witnesses claimed they saw the DJ punch Weinstein in the face and knock him down, but Weinstein denied to Page 6 that any fist flew and downplayed the incident. He was a little drunk, Weinstein told us. He fell a trip to my friend Pascali, the girlfriend of Nicholas Rasheen, who was at my table. He touched her inappropriately, and I said, is he a friend of yours? She said, I've never seen him before in my life. He did it again. I told him to stop. 3 times I asked him not to, and then I physically removed him. It was over in a minute. But one witness insisted that Yulgawaba and Weinstein had a heated argument, that the DJ punched Weinstein, knocking him down, and that someone from Harvey's table then tackled him before the DJ was thrown out. Nur Khan, the Rose Bar's creative director, said, who wants to read this garbage? Who wants to read this anymore? Who goes to these places? Listen to this. In the restaurant at the time was Heath Ledger, Zach Braff, Brandon Davis, Uma Thurman, Gemma Ward, Jamie Burke, Mae Anderson. Wow. Oh, I got to eat there. Man, I got to drink there. Ooh, they eat there. Woo, all the people who puke on themselves on Sunset Boulevard are all there. What am I missing? I can't wait to go there. There'd be another schmuck waiting on a line. I'll be right back. Savage.
Old black magic has me in its spell.
Old black magic that you weave so well.
Those icy fingers up and down my spine.
The same old witchcraft when your eyes meet mine.
It is the Savage Nation, Louis Prima and Kelly Smith. They don't make them like that anymore, thank God. No, I just want to hear one more jingling jangling.
Down and down I go.
What energy this guy has. He must have been a lunatic. Imagine this guy partying. Oh, forget about it. Turn it off. I could just imagine what he must have done in Las Vegas with his buddies. God, with that kind of manic energy, I just can't believe it. It'd be like me on Lipton tea. Monkeys rampage at Indian capital. Just after the Indian, weeks after the Indians' capital's deputy mayor toppled to his death fighting off a pack of monkeys, the animals are back on the attack, sparking fresh concerns about the simian menace. One woman was seriously hurt, and 24 other people were given first aid after monkeys rampaged through a neighborhood in East Delhi over the weekend. So the monkeys are out of control. Rogue monkeys running into residences. I guess if I go on with the story, I'll be accused of simiophobia, and I'm liable to face a boycott from some monkeys around the globe, and I can't afford that. Because if the monkeys were to boycott my products, there'd be no conservatives left to buy them, I suppose. That reminds me, the monkeys going crazy. You know, many people, everything they turn into cute. Everything's cute. A bear is cute. A monkey's cute. You know, this is such liberal stupidity. Monkeys are dangerous with big teeth. So it reminds me of Louis and the monkey story, which I told once at most in my tenure on radio. We go back now, ladies and gentlemen, put on your resting cap. We're going to go back in time. We're going back to the Lower East Side of New York. Dad owns a small antiques mart. Little old Michael's cleaning bronzes in the back, and there's Louis the bum from the Bowery, who in those days, he was a drunk. He wasn't a bum. He worked. Dad would have him in on the weekends, and he'd clean the bronzes and whatever he did down there. I loved Louis. Louis was a great guy. But now you got to understand, this guy was a stoned alcoholic of the old school. Skinny like a rail. White guy, skinny like a rail, smoked like unfiltered cigarettes. But one of the nicest guys on earth. He wears the rubber apron. He's cleaning downstairs. Does the bronzes. Then, of course, I took over because Dad wanted cheap child labor. And where else are you going to get it from his son, you know? So I'm doing the thing. So I got to know Louis over the years. And he taught me various things. Like once we had Louis over to the house. I'll never forget it. I was so proud that my father took this guy who I liked all the way out to Queens and invited him to dinner. I don't know what came over. Maybe it was Thanksgiving or whatever. And Louis had dinner with us at the table. And the guy was surprisingly erudite, and he knew things. And like after dinner, we did games, and Louis the drunk showed me how to bend nails. He showed me mind over matter. He took a nail and he showed me that if you put your fingers, blah, 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 and put your mind on it and keep up the pressure, the nail would bend. I was shocked because I was a skinny kid with little hands and I bent the nail. And he taught me mind over matter, but it was all molecular because you put the heat and the pressure, blah, 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 eventually that nail is going to bend. But I learned in life it's the same thing. It's all willpower, okay? Now there's another element to the story. So Louis is this kind of guy, interesting, but an alcoholic, and this and that. Years go by. He lives alone in Williamsburg. In those days, Williamsburg was like a slum, zero, you know, oil cloth city, leftover apartments from the last century. No one wanted to be there but the poor. So he lives there alone. He's very lonely. He gets a monkey. He wants a monkey. Now, out of the world, nobody in those days had a monkey. Dogs, yes. Cats, yes. No. Who had a monkey in those days? Louis gets a monkey. But Louis don't just get a spider monkey, one of the skinny little monkeys. Louis gets a woolly monkey. Now, woolly monkeys are already strong. They got a chest on them. They got strong hands. And Louis's in love with this monkey. For a couple of months, they're inseparable. Wherever he goes, there's the monkey. And the monkey's on his shoulder and where he's cleaning and he's happy. Now, Louis was the kind of guy that if he went to a bar in the Lower East Side, I remember the name to this day, named Hamill and Corn. Whatever money he made for my father, he'd take 2 minutes later, he'd be in the bar, and he'd throw money in a jukebox, and he would whistle and sing, and he'd buy everyone drinks till he was broke. He'd stumble out in the street, He would get hit by a car, sleep on a barrel. He didn't care. He lived for the booze, and that was it. But he had a heart of gold. So Louis gets the monkey, finally has someone to fill his empty nights. And as I say, they were inseparable. Well, as time went on, we get a call. Louis's in the hospital. He's dying. What? The monkey went crazy in his apartment, attacked him, and almost ripped him to pieces. And he suffered for 6 months in the hospital. I don't know which hospital. Probably Bellevue, because that's where they all wound up. And the monkey went at him. And you don't know what a monkey's like when it goes crazy. You try to stop an enraged monkey without a weapon. He ripped his neck. He ripped his face. He ripped his arms. He ripped his leg. He ripped his crotch. He ripped his behind. Louis was ripped up pretty bad. And eventually, he took the monkey. I think he grabbed it and threw it out of the window. It just shows you. If he hadn't have done it, he'd be dead today, okay? But a liberal today probably would have tried to talk to the monkey. Louis knew that the instincts had to kick in. It was him or the monkey. And he decided it was better him than the monkey. He didn't consult a liberal book on how to deal with a crazed monkey. He just fought with it and killed it. I think that's what the bottom line is here. But the point is that even a lonely drunk needs companionship at night. In his case, he found the monkey. It was probably the right thing for him to do. But it goes back to the story I opened with, which is that the monkeys are rampaging in India. And the rogue monkeys are breaking into houses, including the daughters of the ruling Congress party. They broke into the Indian parliament. Trouble boiled over in late October when the city's deputy mayor fell to his death driving away monkeys from his home. He was on his balcony reading a paper when four monkeys appear, his family says. He waves a stick to scare them away, tumbles over the edge, and boom, he drops dead, falls off the balcony, and dies. So right now you could see that Louis was a pioneer in a way, in a sense that he understood that monkeys were dangerous long before they did in India when they turned him into a sacred animal. And that's the Louis and the monkey story on the Savage Nation. You got to admit it wasn't bad. It's nicely entertaining. It's almost 6 o'clock here on the West Coast, almost 9 o'clock on the East Coast. And that's it. That's the story. The bottom line is don't get a monkey as a pet. They're wild animals. With God's will and your listenership, Michael Savage shall survive.
Savage.